Hi, everybody, and welcome to those of you online. As you know, we're engaged in this discussion and meditations on the spiritual teacher, and we're up to class three. As usual, we begin by taking refuge together, generating the mind of enlightenment. We say a few preliminary prayers, then the class will unfold, and during the class, there's times for our questioning and also for meditation. So let's begin. So first of all, get comfortable in your seat, please. So wriggle about, adjust yourself. Then check that your spine is straight, that your shoulders relaxed, that your hands and feet are in comfortable positions. And then finally, the eyes. So here you can close them completely, or you can leave them slightly open so a little bit of light still comes in. So once you've got your posture right, just relax and let the body breathe itself. So while you are relaxed and the body is breathing itself, imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha and his spiritual entourage appear in the space above you. You yourself are surrounded by all sentient beings. And all of us are facing the Buddha and the spiritual entourage of bodhisattvas, arahats, meditational guides, and protectors. You recollect that everyone has an equal wish to avoid suffering, equally wishes to be happy, and equally lacks genuine happiness. So you know this, and you also know that the causes of suffering can be eliminated, and potential for genuine happiness can be actualized. And so what you're doing here with this vast crowd of people is leading them in the safe direction of these three rare sublimals so that you can abandon all the causes that create harm and their origins, and then you want to develop all your good qualities. And by leading everyone in the safe direction of the three rare sublimals, you understand that their good qualities too will be increased. Let's together take refuge in the three rare sublimes and generate this mind of enlightenment. Join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Symbol. By the merits I create through the sentence of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Symbol. By the merits I create through the sentence of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Symbol. By the merits I create through the seat of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to death of all sentient beings. So our responses and wishes of ours, our lights and nectars stream forth from the heart of each enlightened being above you. These lights and nectars wash over you and over everyone surrounding you. And all the obstacles to your practice are removed. And your potentials of method and wisdom are empowered. And you recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. You decide to practice these yourselves and to establish all beings in those four states. And to affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness in its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment of friends and hatred of presence. In response to this prayer of ours, again, that lights and nectar stream forth from the heart of each enlightened being above you. And wash over yourself and everyone surrounding you. Now all obstacles are removed and all potentials begin to flourish. The recollection of the fear of merit above you, you decide to increase the merit and to purify the mind of any negativity that's left. And so you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, natural and imaginary. I declare all my negative actions that you made since the beginning of time, and rejoice in the merit of all and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of sacred existence, eternally of God of living beings. I dedicate my own mental spirits to the great unknown. Now to stop us clinging to the practices of purification and the accumulation of merit, I'll recollect emptiness, acknowledge that your body, your mind, speech, the merit, every object in your senses is empty of any intrinsic nature. And it's just dependently upon causes, conditions, parts, and naming. So understanding this, see all this fellow has been emptying and reappearing as a pure land. And this land we're going to offer to the Buddha and his entourage. Again, join me in saying, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, long ground merit, four continents, the sun and moon. I know that this is the worthy of the offering. May all living beings enjoy its glory. The Buddha accepts the offering and smiles at you. You look up into his gaze, stare into his eyes, and you feel accepted, at ease, and confident that your practice is going to bear fruit. Now, an inhalation of the Buddha leaves his heart, moves through space, and comes to abide above the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. This inhalation now descends down to the level of your heart and begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light and nectar. And these begin to pour out through the pores of the skin, filling the 10 directions of space and establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. And from within the vast field of enlightenment, you hear the sound of the mantra of Shakyamuni. And we begin to join in saying it three times. For a few times. Ta-da. like a whole living room in one house, one house, so hot. Now the lights begin to withdraw from the 10 directions of space, they lean into your heart. You hear different sounds, feel or see beneath you. You are embodied. And recognize that these meditation that we just did was one of imagination. And though it has been imagined, it has also imprinted the mind with conditions that will bring about awakening. Let's rejoice in that. And think, I'll need to do even more than that. I need to understand the whole path itself. And I need to generate the realizations of that path. We want to do this with this family. We force them to do with others. And just breathing deeply through the nostrils. Exhale through the mouth. And let your eyes flash open. Okay. So we've covered what was the third week, so I've had 2 weeks already. We've covered the need for a teacher. George, why do we need a teacher? What's the reason that they give in the text? We need a teacher because we don't know how to gather the two accumulations or purify the two obscurations. Two obscurations are Chris?
Cognitive and
afflictive. Excellent. And so we need a teacher to do that. There are different types of teachers. Can anybody remember, say, two types of teaching?
Mahayana master
and?
Ritual teacher.
That's right. Yeah, and so these teachers are needed for the different levels of practice and sort of engagement. Finding a teacher is not so easy. Can you give me at least one thing you can do to, when you look for a teacher, what you should be checking? That's right. You want to find out sure the teacher belongs to the image. That's right. And then finally, the teacher's 10 qualities. So, okay. Ben, you go for the first three. What are the first three?
The rest of the three high trainings, I mean, it's not ethical, it's somewhat a word for it.
Discipline.
And then...
Serene, sorry, and pacified.
Right,
okay. Yeah. Okay, so these relate to three higher trainings. So there are three other qualities the teacher will need. Jordan?
He has to have a thorough scriptural knowledge,
read a lot of books,
knows more than we do.
Yes, that's right.
And has to understand the nature of reality conceptually.
Excellent. That's right. That's good. Yep. And finally, the teacher needs 4 skills that are very valuable for a student. So, Ian, would you just give me like a couple of them? Then I'll get Chris through the last 2.
They have to be enthusiastic teachers, and they must be kind to their students.
It's teach from the perspective of love and kindness to the student. Okay. And Chris, what are the other 2 qualities?
Skill and understanding and explaining that.
Yeah, that's right, and great skills. And the last one was to have abandoned the spirit of this. It's a sort of bit like enthusiasm, right? So, you have to abandon being the spirit of it because, as you know, many times we as students forget what the teachers taught us from week to week, and you find the teachers do the same teachings again and again and again. So not to be dispirited. For me, what I try and do is either make up acronyms or make pictures up together. And so my first one is always, I always say the discipline, and it's really easy because I see that I have a woman in her, gear in books in my mind, which has got to work it up. And there's the word of sort of serene. And then, it's like it's sort of associated with pacifier is now, so it's thoroughly pacified. So if you make your pictures a little bit weird, they're very easy to remember. Anyways, we've got very good everybody. So these are the books, of course. Now you can see there's a couple of new ones I've put up. There's one down here called The Ocean of Ultimate Meaning, which is all about Mahamudra teachings, and the Dzogchen Primer, which is a terrific book written by Dzogchen masters. So I'll put these two up here because they have a different way of looking at the teacher, you know, at our need for a teacher. And so we'll talk about that as we go through. Like I said, each spiritual tradition relies on particular texts, and of course the Kagyu and Kagyu and the Nyingma rely on quite different texts and different masters. So they each have their own lamrim as well. So they each have different examples and stories and all sorts of things. That's why I find it quite interesting to read all of them, just because you get such a wide variety of stories and similes. Yeah, they're similar, but they have the same topics, but they can start in different places. Like the Kagyu start off with Buddha nature. Dzogchen start off with faith. We start off with guru devotion. So each lineage can start off in a different way. They cover the same different topics. They cover all the same topics, though, but just in different ways. It's quite interesting to have you sort of go through and see what you can take from it, which I hope to show you in this on these slides. Now, today's topics, this idea about what can we do but we don't have a teacher. We covered a little bit about this last time, and we said, then the Buddha said, rely upon the text. This is not the text of teaching. But I'll show you a couple of other ways too. Today we're going to have a look at the qualities of the student and the disadvantages of having them, the disadvantages of not having them, and the advantages of having them. Okay, so now here's this one here where we have the presentation from the Kagyu and the Nyingma, meaning Mahamudra and Dzogchen traditions. So this here is a diagram of course you can see the person, the statues of the Buddha, but it's made up of what they call these elements. So when we talk about a sentient being or a Buddha or a human being, you can describe them in different ways. One of the most common ones, and the way everyone here should be familiar with, is the five aggregates. But you can also talk about it from the perspective of the six elements. So these elements can be things like the earth element that relates to the sangha. So if I'm going to just across the door and just go on a push up, my hands are going to rush up into the solidity of her body. So there's solidity there. We all have liquids within ourselves, so it's called the water element. Anything of the liquid nature in us is described as the element of water. We also have a lot of heat within the body. I mean, if you just go like that, you can feel the heat on your hand. It's another element. And of course, I'm speaking, so the words are moving. All your blood is moving through your body, your thoughts are moving. So this is right to wind, or what they call energy, the wind energy. Then we also have a lot of space within the body. So if you open your mouth, you've got space inside your mouth. You've got space along your organs, all these sort of things. Right? And finally, the last one, of course, is when all these are together, you have consciousness as well. So the elements of consciousness. So, and like I said, so earth is related to solidity, the water to fluidity, fire to heat, wind to energy. And space is related to emptiness. One of the ways of defining space is the absence of anything obstructive. The way you describe emptiness is the absence of inherent existence. So that's what they have in common, these two absences. That's why they're related like this. So, the first element, earth, relates to humility. So stop having that. So, in other words, we have everything in place already to meet the master. We have earth, water, fire, wind, and space. And the earth is related to humility. This is the basis for all good qualities. The water, fluidity, is related to compassion. Because water softens. Fire and heat, this is related to our intelligence. To illuminate and consume ignorance and confusion. Fire. Mixes the wind, and that's related to realizations. So wind related to energy and breath. So meditative experiences and realizations which dismantle all the false beliefs, false notions, and wrong views. And lastly, we have space, right? Related to emptiness. So everything within our body, mind, around us is all empty. And this is all encompassing. So emptiness is found in everything. So we've already got everything. So I like that sort of presentation. It makes me quite confident, right? That, well, even though I don't have an external teacher, I've got a whole basis for the teaching. Everything's there in place already. And so that's one of the reasons why I like reading the Mahamudra and the Dzogchen texts, because they're coming at it from the perspective of, what, everything's good already. You're missing nothing. It's like taking from the view you're re-enlightened, and then going backwards, where from a literal perspective, if you're not enlightened, you're going up, and you need these things. This perspective is you've got these things. So if you ever feel like, oh man, I'm a long way, blah, 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 you can take this sort of go and go, in fact, from this perspective, everything's already present. You know, that's why I sort of put this thing up, is I know that there's plenty of times when people just don't have any confidence in that enlightenment is possible. Now, so now's the verse coming up, and this is from Arya Deva. So Arya Deva was Nagarjuna's spiritual son. So Arya Deva, so in other words, Nagarjuna is a fantastic, amazing teacher. He's actually called the second Buddha. His major disciple was this fellow called Arya Deva. So this is what Arya Deva says about the qualities needed in a student. He's an unprejudiced, intelligent, and interested listener is called a vessel. The good qualities of the instructor do not appear otherwise, nor do those of fellow listeners. So remember we talked a little while back about how to listen properly, and they had the vessel. Right? So here we're taking, this is this vessel, right? This mind, which is unprejudiced, intelligent, and interested. A mind like that is the right sort of mind to have for the teachings to be poured into. So these traits enable the disciples to discern teachings correctly, to respect their mentors, and to fully engage in the practices of spiritual transformation. Now, these qualities need to be cultivated. When you do, then we become receptive vessels. Another way of saying this is that a suitable vessel for receiving the Dharma must possess three key qualities: honesty, discernment, and genuine interest. Without these, students risk distorting the virtues of their teacher and teachings, and they misinterpret pure qualities as false. Conversely, if you have these, that won't happen. First, well, now what I'll do, that was Ari Davis' paper. But Chandrakirti, another great disciple of the Buddha who appeared many hundreds of years after Nagarjuna and Aryadeva, added two other qualities to these three. And so let's have a look at them. So this is the quality that Aryadeva put up, right? To be non-biased, you have to be intelligent and to be greatly diligent. And then Chandrakirti added these two others, to be respectful and to be attentive. So to be deep commitment, so great diligence means, you know, deep commitment to practicing the instructions. And I guess you've got to pay attention, right? Otherwise, you'll be like that cup that pours and goes out the cracks. So what we'll do now is we'll just have a look at each of these qualities and I'll give a bit of commentary about them and then we'll come to our meditation. So to be non-biased, I like this particular picture here because all these people are major holders of great religions. I think the fellow on the black African man was an Anglican. The man in the middle is on the other side of his holiness is a Muslim. And the lady on this side was a Jewish person. So his holiness gets on with, you know, all the religions in the world, and so that, like that, you respect all of them. So in relation to being non-biased, it means do not disparage the religions and the teachers of religions that are not your own. So being non-biased means maintaining a clear, open mind that is free from the pollution of prejudice. This ensures that you can evaluate teachings based on their own merit rather than on your own personal attachments. So, you know, this is not going to happen straight away, but we do have our own ideas about things, and it's going to take some time before you can free yourself from those preconceptions and not, you know, close-mindedly cling to your own views. So non-bias, another term for non-bias is impartiality. It requires letting go of the biases and attachments to your own views. So partiality obscures truth, it prevents peace and the realization of selflessness. You might have heard that story. It's not, I don't think it's a Buddhist story, but the story could go across to any sort of religion. So let me just go. There's a great master who's living up at a cave somewhere in the Himalayas. And an American scholar, Buddhist scholar, went up to see him and have a chat to him about practice and things like this. And so when they sat down together, you know, the master, of course, has welcomed the guests. You have a cup of tea, teapot, everything. And so they start talking. And what happens, of course, is the student, the man from America, starts telling him about what he knows. And this goes on for some time. Now, okay, I'll come to some. So sit on for some time. So then the master, he picks up the teapot and starts to pour the scholar a cup of tea. And he just keeps pouring into all the tea. It overflows. And he's sort of saying, like, how can I give you anything new when you're already packed up to the brim with your own knowledge, and nothing I can say is actually going to go in, as you can see. So I think you'll see the story in the Zen tradition, in the normal Buddhist tradition. It's a story that goes across many of the traditions, trying to show us, you know, this idea of being non-biased, to not have so much, you know. So another thing here, so when you go to meet your gurus and masters, it's not oftentimes it's a little stressful, you feel it, right? And what will happen there, often you try and fill the space up, because you can sit there and I think the smart thing is ask questions. Don't tell them everything about yourself. It's not necessary. They don't need to hear all that. They're really interested in Dharma and what you don't know rather than what you do know. So I've been in places where you sit and wait and somebody else goes in before you, but you can still hear what's going on. And oh my gosh, it's sort of embarrassing because maybe the person gets so overwhelmed with anxiety they can't stop talking about themselves and what they've done and all their experiences and things like that. You know, so try not to be one of those people. Have a good question or two or three questions is a good idea. Yeah, so what, you don't know anything. You've come there for help. Of course, the second is being intelligent. So intelligent here means you understand what's productive and what is not. So this intelligence goes beyond academic knowledge. It requires investigation of the teaching's origin and the validation through reasoning and scripture. It helps us reject false explanations and sort of embrace the essence of Dharma. So one of the things what we call it, the essence of Dharma here is to work in accordance with Buddhist teachings on cause and effect. This is the major thing. So today was really interesting. We had a visitor, our teacher is going to be teaching tomorrow night and over the weekend. So he said this thing that, what did he say? Oh, yes. He said how difficult it is to generate renunciation, how really hard that is and how that affects you. And I was listening to it, I was thinking, yeah, you're right, because you basically have to abandon every idea you've ever grown up with. Everything is mistaken.
It included abandoning your own idea of self.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's my power. Yeah, and of course, the homeland doesn't actually, doesn't mean like the land you live in or particular house you live in, but it's like the similar, all these ideas that are your home. And the home, of course, is samsara. So, like, you have to sort of, you'll see, isn't it? And you've heard that story where the Buddha says, yeah, my teachings go against the stream. So the stream, of course, is our ordinary way of thinking. And this is what will happen, what you discover, of course, when you become a Buddhist, take refuge. Boy, how your friends drop off. And how little you have in common with ordinary people anymore. It's not so easy. So to understand what's productive and what is not, you understand it, that my pain and my suffering is not coming out from out there. People aren't doing it to me. It's just like, no, it's my own undisciplined mind. That's the major producer of my suffering. And when I want to be happy, it's not ice creams and shoes and movies that make me happy, right? I need a mind that's disciplined. That's the source of my happiness. This is what it's also saying to be like intelligent. We know that otherwise the ways of the world, the ways we've been taught, are really limited, aren't they, in terms of what they can provide us in terms of our happiness. Because the way of the world was inspired is like, get a lot of money, great looking woman, a fast car, lots of money, and get some power too. That's it, you'll be happy. But we know lots of people who have all that and they're certainly not happy. There's no certainty at all that money or power or a good looking wife or husband or partner, any of these things will actually make us happy. So that's what I'm saying, to understand that, and go, okay, then I can't throw all my eggs into the samsara basket and think I'll be happy. Intelligence is the ability to tell the difference between a helpful path and a harmful one. It's not, he says, you do not just believe what you're told. Instead, test every teaching. Remember that story of the Buddha meeting the Kalamas, the village of the Kalama people? He was going through, and he's got his disciples with him, and he gives a teaching, and they go, excuse me, there are many people just like yourself who come through our village and give teachings. And everyone is saying different things. Why should we believe you? Why should we take up your teachings? You know, and then he says, then he gives this great answer, says, do not adopt my teachings because of me. Do not adopt my teachings because of what you heard. So he says all these ways of why you should, when you should not take up the teachings. And then he says, however, if you rely upon a wise person and test things for yourself, then you'll know whether to adopt them or not. So it's great, he puts the responsibility back on us, doesn't he? He said, well, check them out, try them out. See how it works, see how it goes. If it works for you, and if a wise person supports us, wisdom supports it, adopt it. If it doesn't, just put it aside. So I've sort of, I try and adopt that attitude myself, it's just if you don't. Yeah, you know, you try and check as best you can. And it means, not to, you know, you check yourself, of course, as best you can, but then you might find somebody else who's quite a serene type person, isn't it? And then you might ask them, how do you do it? What do you do? In fact, Venerable Gendron was quite interesting, wasn't it, Ian, when he's talking about caring for the students. Like how easily you can mislead yourself through the teachings and go wrong. And so he was saying, like, all his students have his email address, and he says, I want to be able to talk to people so I know what's going on. I don't want them to flip out or go wrong in some way. But it's very easy to, isn't it? You know, we're just working on ourselves. If you've just got books and no person who actually knows, it can be tricky. So we need to be intelligent about it. Now the third one, of course, is what's called, and they have to be greatly diligent. Basically, this means, and I'll put it better, just walk your talk. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're meant to be all about, isn't it? You know, we get these teachings, we're meant to embody them. We're meant to be, you know, teachings, body teaching, and we're teaching about ourselves. Or like we don't see it, so. Yeah. So great diligence is the enthusiastic seriousness of purpose that allows us to retain the teachings and instructions and apply them. Numerous students are open-minded and intelligent. If they do not practice, they'll not progress. And so you can see the Venerable Gendron here, he's really practice orientated. He's not going to do a lot of the philosophy into the Mahamudra or anything like that. It's going to be a practice. I'll give you talk a little bit about it. I'm going to perhaps keep a record of your practices and things like this, and then get back to it and say, I'm doing this, and this is what's happening. So unusual. Yeah, so it's not just that we work hard. We need two other things. One is the sort of we need to bring to our study a sense of urgency. And that's what, of course, the meditations on death and impermanence, that's their point, right? You could die at any time and say, oh gosh, I'm going to move on here. I'm this old now. You know, you can do the analysis all the rest of the way. Now you could die at any time, you get sick, you get older, it's harder to study, it's harder to meditate, all these sort of things. So that's sort of like, could make you feel a bit, so you need to be, that your effort should be joyous. And it's not easy work, but we shouldn't expect it to be easy anyway. But we're doing something really valuable and useful. You know, to remind yourself of that. Say you do that meditation, you take reference together, and all the lights go out from your heart, fill the universe and everybody, and the universe becomes a light. That's so you either sort of stay there for a while and like get that sense of joy, like, wow, I've accomplished my purpose. This is what a Buddha does, or I'm a Buddha. You know, just for that little time, I think, yeah, I'm bringing about the welfare of all beings. Oh, thank goodness. Feel great about it, and of course, it will come back in. Also, I love the idea of the lights coming back in, because in one way, it's that you're embracing all sentient beings in the universe, including in the heart, except they're all enlightened. So it's like now your body is just absolutely full of all these Buddha figures, which, you know, this is one of the tantric things. And this was the way of looking at yourself in tantra, a clear body, but it's like the universe itself, and in that body, millions and millions and millions of enlightened beings. Now, this is a sort of preliminary to that, or a real quick way of doing it, without just sort of knowing. Later on, they'll tell you all about it. Yeah, so you want to be able to walk our talk, don't make us. Yeah, so one of the things that Ben and I were talking about is so you need to be careful here with great diligence. And like I said, bring to it a sense of joy and not a sense of struggle and hard work, like this is a burden. Because it does happen that over time, you know, you'll take different initiations and things like that. Once you do, then there's these commitments. And then for some reason, these seem to be like a burden to people. And when that happens, then practice gets hard. You know, it seems like I've got too much to do. How can I fit this into my life? So I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do this. Mind goes sort of crazy, I can't do this. So you start doing that, you better take a break. And so you probably need to structure your time in some different way to work it out. Yeah, and you won't go far like this, you'll give it up, right? Because it's just too hard. But this is why it's really important to have a sense of joy in it. So the other thing I did was I went online and listened to a couple of Venerable Gendron's teachings. So on the Mahamudra, what we're going to be doing over the weekend. So one of the major causes for the development of the Mahamudra is devotion. So this devotion topic is like relying upon the Guru, right, and devoting yourself to the Guru and the word and thought. So that's like the first one. But the way he did it, he covered that in We Take Refuge. So like there's the refuge field, there's the Buddha, he's no different than your own master. So there he is. And when his rays of light go out across, there's like a sense of joy that you're in the company of your teacher. The next one is respect. And as I was saying, like last week, I think I was telling you, I knew this fellow was my teacher, adopted him as my teacher, based on his wisdom. And I noticed over a couple of years at least, it was like, yeah, but I don't feel anything. Any warmth towards my teacher. I knew there was something wrong there. So I went back to the text and found out that the way to develop this warmth is to recollect the kindness of the teacher, not the wisdom. And then I did that, and of course, then it changed immediately. Yeah, so I thought, wow, just that, you know, focusing on the wisdom. That's not what we should do. We should focus on the kindness. So I did that, and then of course the whole relationship changed. So what is the respect is for the teacher and the teaching. And when it's for the teacher, it's for the kindness of the teacher. And of course, when the teacher, you just look at that and go, well, this teaching cuts through suffering like that. Yeah, and then, wow, that's terrific. So when you guys were all grown up, You must have heard your parents say to you to respect your elders or to respect other people. Did they ever give you a reason for that?
No logic.
No, just that they're old. And you notice that they sometimes aren't even as smart as you were when you were a kid. I did. Now, this doesn't make any sense to me to respect people for their because of their age. Other than my dad's older than me, but there he does some pretty silly things. And so did all these other people, you know? So of course, then why should I respect them? But when I have this respect for the kindness, I know that's what I had for sure. Someone who's kind to me, or I see them kind to dogs and animals and other people, I like those people straight away, shouldn't it? And you know, they say things, well, I listen, because you can see through their actions, they're kind people. So respect sort of is the doorway for the wisdom to enter. So one of the things that works against respect, of course, is arrogance or a sense of pride in yourself. You know, it just puts up a huge barrier against hearing what they actually have to say. What do you think she's doing? She's going like that. What does that mean? She's remembered the teacher's advice. She's forgotten, but now she remembers. That's right. It's like too late. It's like the duh. Yes, we could have put Homer Simpson there, eh? So one of the things that Geshe Sopa said was, you know, so when teachers give instructions or give advice, they do it in two ways. So the first way, and probably the most common way, is it's general advice to a wide open audience. Like if we're all sitting here and I was up here, I'll be talking, I'm giving advice, so it's general. And if it suits you, if you think, oh, that's a good idea, then take it and use it. There are many times in general advice and people just let it all go. Then there's another type of advice where it becomes like specific advice. That's when you make an appointment with your teacher and you go into them with a specific problem and they give it to you specifically. So you know, like when we that book The Alarm Was Open, some of you have read some of the extracts on the FPMG site. So you can see the people coming with the same problem, but the advice is different each time. And that's, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So sometimes general is not suitable. It's, you know, I heard that. Like for me one time, I knew that the general advice to combat attachment was to look beneath the skin, see what a person is made up of, right? So I did that, and what happened was I got to dislike the people, which is, you know, that's not what's meant to happen. Just, see, they're all ugly and nothing to do with them. Yes, I got a version rather than this, you know, as an antidote to the lust, you know, to the attachment to others. Yeah, so, and then, you know, again, I thought something's wrong here because I don't think this is meant to happen. I don't think we need to have a version to be thought. And yeah, so then that took a bit of time again to sort of like correct it, you know, to try and think, well, what is it then? What am I doing again? It's mistaken. So I didn't. So that was the practice. Oh, okay. But then in the Mahayana, there's this one where to combat lust against the opposite sex, you just take the person who's younger. If the woman was younger, so I'm a man, I'm attracted to women. If I see the woman is younger than me, I look at them as my daughter. If they're the same age as me, I see them as my sister. If they're older than me, I see them as my mother. And I like that method. Mm-hmm. And I'm much better than this. I thought, wow, that suits me. And that's the one I'm working with. I'll keep on that one. And it really works really well for me. Yes, being attentive is the active power of focused listening. Again, it's like this one works against the closed vessel or the upside down vessel. To be up attentive, you've got to turn the teapot up the right way or the cup up the right way when the teachings can go in. So how can we sort of say become like more attentive or more respectful and so forth? Well, there are different things you can do. So one time, like you might, not even now, or not now, but some other time, you can do this in the class, or maybe just with another friend of yours that you sit there, right? So you have conversations with one another. So just decide to not interrupt them for a certain amount of time. Yeah, and listen to what they have to say, and then, what do you call it, reflect back to them what they said. That shows you're attentive. People really love it. It really shows you're listening, but it helps you to develop this attentive quality. They're actually hearing it, you come back with it. And if you're wrong or unclear, they'll clarify it for you. In terms of the previous one, respect, try to find something that you do respect, either a Buddhist teacher or something that you hold in high esteem, right? And list their qualities as best you can, and try to find three of their qualities, or at least two or three qualities, that they have and you don't have. And then consciously decide to value their perspective more than your own for a certain amount of time. Again, you might just go like this for 5 minutes. Deborah's got this lovely quality of serenity. That's right. And I'm certainly not that way. And you know, find me, I'm not a very serene person, so I value your serenity. And I'm going to be quiet and just watch you for the next 5 minutes and see if I can embody that close qualities or so. And so for each of these qualities, you might look for them in others and see if you can emulate them yourself. Okay, so here's my first question to you. Name these 5 qualities backwards. So we started off with respectful. What came before respect? What was that attentiveness? Attentive was at the end, right? We were attentive. That made us go backwards. Respect.
Intelligence?
No.
Uh-huh. Great intelligence.
Then intelligence.
And lastly?
Non-biased.
Good one.
Okay. Yeah. So I've done it like this. I don't know how many times I've done this course now. But again, like I said to you, what makes it easy, what I find an easy way to remember all these things is like you form acronyms or you make pictures of. So what's the acronym for non-biased, intelligent, greatly diligent, respectful, and attentive?
So
this is the one. Got NIG, and you can go attentive and respectful. What does that spell?
R.
You got Yeah. So of course, this is the this is not a, what can I say? Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Right? So all I have to do in my mind is just see a small Negro boy.
Oh,
yeah. I never forget it. My student is coming to class. He's non-violent, intelligent, greatly diligent, attentive, and respectful.
I mean, what about the country Niger and you replace the
Yay? Yeah, you can do that too. If that's what sticks in your mind. The idea is to get it to stick. The things that stick are rude things.
True. Yeah?
Yeah, and the really funny things. Yeah. So if you can make your acronym or your picture together really funny or rude in some way, so it's like a bit of a slap in the face, you're not going to forget this. Yeah. Anyway, just a suggestion, because you know, there's so many lists here, there's so many things to remember. So if you can bring some humour into it, makes learning a little easier. Another thing that might help, certainly help me, is to buy a book on memory. Because there are there's so many different ways you can help your memory retain stuff. Just find things that suit you. There's lots of them, so you can sort of pull from here, pull from there, put it together any way you like, as long as it works for you. That's the most important thing. And then you can just like come out here and go, okay, I'll go through my laminate. You know, go, okay, here's the qualities of the teacher. There are 10. You just go 3, 3, 4. The last one is the same. And then I've got my student. Well, I'm a little Negro girl or boy. And then straight away, there's the qualities of that. So each thing that has these lists, try and find a way. Otherwise, you'll sit here and listen. You'll just go in and out. You know, and we sort of know how memory works. So if we leave here and don't recollect or do the sort of thing within the hour, it's going to go. So try and do this stuff before you sleep, it's a virtual sleep. When you wake up in the morning, it's like, okay. You won't have to do it too long because it'll stay there. Yeah, if you have anything interesting you'd like to say about these qualities of yourself as a student.
Eddie, it was really interesting when you said about commitment, how sometimes we view it as a burden. It's a very Western thing. It's like, you know, even when you make a commitment to a partner, someone's like, oh, it's a ball and chain. And it's like, whereas commitment doesn't have to be a burden. It can be, it's something that you willingly take on to change your life, right?
Yeah, and glad to do so, isn't it? I'm committed to this. I'm not letting this go. Yeah. The other thing I know is, yeah, how we want things to, we say things like, it's not very easy though, is it? It's like everything has to be easy. Otherwise, if we say it's hard, well, I'm not going to do that. You know, it's like, whoa.
I think that ongoing enthusiasm to hear teachings is a good attitude. I mean, I think you're talking to the converted here, but I mean, I would love to learn. I want that.
Yeah.
I want to hear different people.
Yeah, me too.
You
know? Yeah. Okay, let's do our meditation. Get yourself comfortable in your seat. Drop your shoulders, elongate the spine. Then either close the eyes completely or leave them partially open. Now just let your body breathe itself for a couple of minutes. The exhalation of breath, just release all tension from your shoulders and jaw. And refresh your altruism. And that you're doing this meditation to become enlightened for the benefit of all beings. if you can imagine yourself as a traveller who's been lost in a thick, dark fog. Now you wish to see your way out of it, you need to be genuinely curious, trying to see a way through the fog. This meditation is really about how the mind works, whether you're building a prison or whether you're actually seeking freedom. When you understand how the mind works, and when you adopt the teachings of the Buddha, and stop blaming others and begin to train the mind. You are intelligent. Imagine your mind now, a new vast clear lake. Reflects the moon perfectly on its surface. Can you listen to others without a hidden agenda? So being unbiased means letting go of the need to be right. You're open, like a mirror, reflecting all the things that appear, but not grasping to things. So are you able to use your mind to recognize what is true about the teachings and what might be false? Clear thinking is like a light that reveals that the road ahead is safe. It's like a lamp that can find the gold hidden in the dirt. And do you have the strength to keep going when you are tired? So bring diligence. Diligence itself is a steady warmth that slowly transforms the mind. It's like a river flowing until it finally meets the sea. So the ideal student will be non-biased, intelligent, greatly diligent, attentive, and respectful. Now in your own time, just go back with something was respectful, what came before respectful. So we look for being non-biased, intelligent, greatly diligent, attentive, and respectful. If you're respectful and you're attentive, greatly diligent, intelligent, and non-biased. So today, or tomorrow, or this evening, just commit to listening fully to one person without cutting in. Now breathing in, exhale, knowing that you're ready to let go. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the advantages of having these qualities. So this, I took this from B.C. Sophie's commentary on Guru Devotion. So if you have these qualities, five qualities, what's great about this is that you will see the qualities of the guru as qualities and not as faults. And secondly, which is really great, up to a point, I suppose, the qualities of the disciple will appear as qualities to the guru and not as faults. But the scary thing about that, isn't it, is that the teacher calls you up front and sit in the front row. That's asking you things. He says, when you have these five qualities, your perspective changes. Instead of seeing the teacher's corrections as personal attacks, you see them as helpful tools. You recognize that their wisdom is a benefit to your life. So I remember one of our students, she was coming to Lakewood Tantra Center when we were at Newmarket. And one day she asked a question to Geshe, and maybe it was the way she phrased it, but he was really stern with her, and he said, you should be more, it was like a sort of told her off, it was like this finger shaking thing. It was like to stop thinking and reflecting on the faults of others and concentrate on your own. Anyway, she didn't like it, never came back. And I only found out years and years later that I met her again, and she told me this last guy, oh my God, like, man, that's what she took as like a personal attack. And but then one night, I ended up talking to this woman, and then I found, well, she had a lot of really heavy things that were taking place in her life. Her home life was really hard. She had a father that was really critical. And she's always been criticizing, can't, blah, blah, blah. So the guest said, this was just like too much, overwhelmed. And it's found it very difficult to come back. Yeah.
But Jesse Tashisari Kinsuncha had a really great shot at me early on in the piece, which blew me out. I went home bawling my eyes out, saying, I'm never going back there. And I settled down, and then I sort of looked at it again. I thought, maybe he was attacking my pride, not me.
Yeah. Good on you.
I reframed it, and then I said, I'm coming back.
Okay. Good on you.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. The teachers aren't attacking us, they're attacking, like the Buddha said, I don't see any bad sentient beings at all. I see pretty bad mental states. I see plenty of afflictions, but I've never seen a bad person. But that's a great way of looking at people. There's nothing wrong with people at all, other than the fact that they've got obscured minds. It's the mind that's creating all these problems for them. Yeah, I had a similar thing like that too. There one time, he asked a question, and I was I don't answer. Anyway, Jesus, like, gave me a verbal thrashing too. Like, Jesus, feel like he'd come up, don't you? Look down, it's like,
That happened to me, the goggle was full that night. Everyone just turned around and I literally just wanted a hole to just fall into. It's pretty funny.
And it's unforgettable, isn't it?
It's absolutely
unforgettable. Yeah, so when it happened to me, I never forgot the answer. I thought I knew the answer, I gave this answer. Like you say, it's boom like this. Then he gave me the answer. Of course, I felt just like you did. Then you go in, I start thinking about that answer, and you go, that other answer was, you'd find faults in that answer. It sounded good, I thought it was right, but doesn't stack up to logic and reasoning. And that's how it comes at you, you know. Yes, so having these qualities, this is one of the advantage, great advantages of it. And but if you don't have them, this is what happens. Because if your own anger, the qualities of the Lama appear as false. And that's what happened to the student. You know, her own anger at having another person who thought was, you know, would never do something like this. Well, this is a thing to remind yourself about teachers. Their whole goal is to get you to enlightenment, and they know that things that prevent you doing it is your own mind. And you've only got a limited amount of time, you know. So some the closer you get to the closer you understand them, then the better the relationship. So Kensa Rinpoche used to say, you know, it is not the teacher that is the root of all your achievements in this, no? It's not. It's the relationship you establish with the teacher. And then, of course, it is dependent arising. It can't be just one thing. of course, it is. Yeah. So, because of your own anger, the qualities appear as false. And then, of course, because of your own attachment, same thing happens, right? The qualities appear as false again. Lacking the qualities of a qualified disciple leads to distorted perceptions of both the teacher and the teachings. The student may mistake virtues for faults or misunderstand defects as virtues. Yeah, so this one here, because of attachment, as faults appear as qualities. Oh boy, lots of problems come from that around the world, eh? Man, this is where you get all these things where, you know, inappropriate behaviors between students and teachers, and might go on for years, and when it comes out, it does it, you know, a terrible disservice to legitimate and, you know, Dharma students and Dharma teachers and teaching. This is, you know, like, over the thing, like for me, myself, yeah, I mean, one way of thinking about it is like, yeah, but it's only me, you know, like I'll pop all the crap, you know, I'll get caught. Perhaps I'm just supposing, you know, I'm flirting with you daughters, right? Now, this is, teachers should do this sort of stuff. But of course, yeah, maybe you like it, but no. But what will happen is that you'll think something about me. And then so later on, of course, perhaps we enter tantrum. And then I mislead you again about the instructions of tantra. And then you don't know any better, and we already have this thing going on. So you follow along. Then you find out later on, gee, Eddie's doing it to Deborah. And other people too. So this has happened. Right? And when it happens, of course, it's like, it creates a lot of problems, right? So, you know, one of my big things was, don't ever do it. One of the things is because it brings disrepute upon the teachings. That's a terrible thing. It's not just one, you know, you go, that bad teacher or something. It's like people call, no, Buddhism is the bad thing. The Dharma is the bad thing. Because here's this person talking about it all the time, meant to be a practitioner. He's doing the complete opposite. And he's leading other people to that problem too. Oh, man, look, that's too big of a catastrophe for me to be involved in, isn't it? So no, it was just me going to jail for doing something. Okay, I did it, the cop it. But when it destroys the happiness of a whole lot of other people too. I was really shocked because we had a student at the old center. She's passed away now, so that's why I'll tell you the story. I just won't tell you her name. So she deliberately cracked on to the teacher and had sex with him. And she told me this. So this is her attachment towards him. He must have had some too, of course. And, you know, so this fault. his faults, with his attachment itself, appeared to her to be like a good thing. Right? You know, a lot of teachers are quite kind to their students, of course they are. But these things can go, wrong. I've read enough books about these stories that go wrong. And, before I entered this path, when I was in New Zealand as a kid, I heard about, religion and gurus coming out and all sorts of things. So in New Zealand, it was Guru Ji. Remember the little boy that came out with the clear light? Oh, man, he was something. He'd touch you and you'd be utterly transformed, change your life despite being touched by it. We're still alive, we're still practicing in India. So when he came to Australia, when he came to New Zealand, the same thing happened. Right? People sold their houses, gave their cars up, people stopped working. Like their students here, their parents followed them. Right? What happened? So he had this incredible power. He's a little boy. And my friend, Dennis, went to see him. He said, he touched me. I was out of like 3 days. Complete bliss. Couldn't speak anything. It's like, wow. And then, of course, I thought, he's so amazing. We've got to give him everything. And then they did. And then, of course, the media picked up on it. And then here's this fellow who's got all these flash cars and gold watches and all sorts of things. And I read that. I thought, be really careful about this guru thing, So then when I came to Australia, of course, I found out the same word, the guru. I went, I got to be really careful here. And it's wonderful because in the text, I say, investigate them. You're meant to actually study them and everything, not just get touched and, all your reason goes out the window and you want to do whatever they suggest or whatever you think is the right thing to do.
That's a cult, isn't it?
That's not a cult. No, just people just got swept up in the experience of it. Like you can imagine, who would believe that, this guy's going to touch you and your life's going to be utterly transformed. And yet it was. Yeah, so people had this thing.
So it's almost like they got the experience of the bliss, but there's no wisdom checking and no like, why did I get that? And like I just want more of that, so I'll just do whatever I can to get more of that feeling.
This was sort of like a what they call avatars or God beings. So this is how I was not a Buddhist, he was a Hindu master. But the same term is guru in there. And then, of course, they use it in Buddhism too. And that word came up. I went, I know about these guys. I just took His Holiness's advice and said, take 5 years to investigate. I went, I'll do that. And of course, Kinsa Rinpoche is not one of those touchy feely fellows, is he? No way. So I like that too. I love that sort of boom, I thought, that's what I need for me because I can, I need to be told in no uncertain terms. And so it's kind of helpful. I hope you can sort of see this because of your own anger, whatever is coming across to you from him will not appear right. And it's the same thing with your attachment. If you overestimate them, and this is what often happened, people read the text and said, you need to see your teacher as the Buddha. And then they took that quite literally. And when, if that's the case, this person can do no wrong. So when these teachers ask students to do things that were not of a Dharma nature, these students did. And then got hurt by it. So what I'm sort of saying is we should try and get the five qualities and cultivate them over time. Okay, so to illustrate these two things, I've got these two similes. So these are taken from the book The Foundation of Buddhist Practice by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I've never seen them in anywhere else in relationship to these teachings. And they're called the Simile of the Snake and the Parable of the Raft. So this is quite straightforward, the Simile of the Snake, right? It's sort of saying, you have these snakes, if you can, well, they call them milk them, isn't it? And you take out the poison, you can turn the poison into something really useful. Right? But you've got to grab the snake the right way. Right? You've got to grab it like the skull, right behind the neck, so it can't turn its head and bite you. Because if you grab the tail, that is a whoa, bang, right? And you're bitten and you're in trouble. So it's sort of saying here, why am I taking these teachings? It's got to try and check your, you know, check your motivation. Don't grab the teachings wrongly. The idea is to grab, to become enlightened to benefit others. That's how you hold the teachings. And don't twist the meanings. And the other is, like I said, the parable of the raft. So the Buddhist snake analogy illustrates the crucial difference between misguided and intelligent approaches to spiritual teachings. Mishandling the Dharma, like grasping a snake incorrectly, can lead to harm and suffering. Conversely, approaching teachings wisely, like skillfully extracting snake venom, transforms the Dharma into potent medicine for spiritual growth and liberation. In other words, the simile of the snake is explained, there are two ways to handle the knowledge. One is unskillfully, and one is skillfully. And you know, again, so also there's a lot about skillfulness sometimes when you first hear this word empty or emptiness. You could grab that word, right? But you go, so I don't exist. I have no self whatsoever. So that would be, you know, grabbing the snake to the wrong end. We come to the parable of the raft. So the raft simile is teaching us that the Dharma is a tool for liberation. It's not an object of attachment. So what I mean by that is that this is not something to use to beat somebody in an argument. Or, yeah, to sort of propagate ego rather than understanding. So here, in other words, it means that have a correct understanding and don't cling to anything. So this parable of the raft, right? So it goes on. So a person is on one side of the river and he wants to get to the other. But the river, of course, is, you know, samsara, and we're on this side of it. We want to cross to nirvana. So how do you get across the river? Well, how about we go along the shore, we just pull out as many reeds as we can, we grab the wood off of them, and we make a raft, and we'll get across. Yeah, so we do that. So you get across the other shore. You create a really good raft, right? Now, what do you do? And the Buddha asks, would it be wise or foolish for a man to pick up that raft and put it on his shoulders and walk across the land? So I said, well, it would be foolish for a person to do that. So then he says, so in the same way with my teachings, you do not grasp them. They're just a means to get across.
So when we're enlightened, we're not Buddhists anymore.
So?
When we're enlightened, we're not Buddhists anymore.
So. But none of those concepts will arise.
that's what I think in the Friday night talk that Venerable Gendon did up at CI. He said something like, he didn't say enlightenment, but he said something funny like, you know, if I was the world leader or something, I'd get rid of the word Buddhism.
Yeah.
I'd get, like, is it just doesn't, yeah, it doesn't matter, it doesn't, it's just,
no, that's right.
It's not, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't want to cling to the concepts as being the thing, you know. If we treat the teachings as a personal possession or a badge of identity, we remain stuck in the middle of the river, focused on the wood of the raft instead of the destination. True reliance means following the instructions precisely, while understanding that the raft is a means to an end. And the end is your own direct experience of reality. In fact, we'll get into an interesting thing at lunch too, didn't we? I went, what did he say? He said something about refuge. Refuge was something. I just went, yeah, because the actual refuge is emptiness. That's the actual refuge. And of course, you know, there's nothing conceptual when you have that experience. What can you say? Right? Well, it's not going to be an idea, that's for sure. So the raft is all the ideas and the conceptions and things and the practices, but they're just to get you there. And you don't, you know, like hold on to make it something, you know, anything like that. Okay, so again, anything interesting you'd like to mention or say?
I was just thinking about parable often. I think time is kind of like that parable. Like I'm going through phases where I've definitely had a badge of identity, like I'm a Buddhist and whatever.
Yeah.
But you realize after time goes on, holding that raft back doesn't bring you any happiness.
What it really do is just separating yourself from everybody else.
So why am I doing this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You realize it doesn't lead to what you're actually trying to get. So.
And I think that's another form of grasping, isn't it? No, I was going to just let it go. So our takeaway, what happened? So we know the five qualities of an ideal student. And if you can, use that terrible picture that I've created for you.
It's in there now.
Sometimes you see the two pictures. You have the Buddha, and then you have Shariputra on one side and Moggallana on the other. And Moggallana is black. Really deep blue. I'm calling the nigger that. You knew that was coming from that bad man? Anyway. Yeah. And next week. So, yeah, try to just use a couple of times tonight, tomorrow, and just, you know, and you go, you've got it. There's only five things here. And so, you know, like next week, we've got another nine things you need to memorize. But again, you know, I can do that one too, because I just took the time to create the, you know, the links and enjoy the pictures to start this one. Oh, they've come home.
Yes.
Okay, folks, we've come to the end, so let's dedicate. So we've been studying, and we want to dedicate the merit of the study towards enlightenment for ourselves and all beings. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly tell you stay on the Guru, and lead all living beings, without exception, into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Guru, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May their born have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may our tissue remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. In the prayer for His Holiness' long life, the wish granted, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness of the soul. To the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes of these times be fulfilled. And lastly, for Impersonal Swift Pretend, in whole living, spreading the moon's spacious and complete teachings for exploration and practice, in all the armor of patience that has never scourged, the incomparable venerable Guru, to you I make this your place.